What's good, everybody? It's man, Big Dub, coming live with another True Players podcast episode. And tonight, I got a special guest host with me. You guys seen him on the podcast previously. It's my brother Matt from Jacobin Sports Show and Believe Knicks podcast. Joining me tonight as we talk about the Knicks tonight. Joey G will be joining us real soon, but we're gonna talk about the Knicks and the dilemma that me and him, probably me and Matt, got with the Knicks organization. The coaching, the rotation of the Knicks, and what's causing them to be a 500 team throughout the season. They're showing spurts of going on an 8-game winning streak. They're losing 4 games right after that. And, you know, the key about the Knicks is the Knicks got to avoid playing the playing game against the Toronto Raptors, who they don't match up well against. So I'm going to let Matthew, you know, tell the people, and just, you're a big Knicks fan just like I am, and you have a sports column that you do on Facebook. So give them your opinion about the situation.
So I wrote about this the other night after the turnoffs in a recap, and I haven't been able to put it into words until this season, but there's always been a conflict with Tom Thibodeau that I haven't understood since he's been the Knicks coach, which is, on the one hand, you can tell watching this man coach that all he wants to do is win. There's no question. This is not someone who's caught up in the limelight, who is here for the paycheck. Like, this man lives and breathes to win every game, every quarter, every possession. Like, he is maniacal about it. We all see that. Mm-hmm. And yet, on a lot of occasions, in a lot of different ways, he does something, it doesn't work, and the stubbornness with which he will repeat the thing that continues to not work when it's obviously hurting the team. If you were looking from the outside, your natural assumption would be like, that guy wants to fail, because you don't keep making the same mistake, unless you're crazy, over and over and over, without knowing that there's a connection there. So, but it hit me the other night, and it was something that happened with Obi Toppin, and then something that happened in the last minute. Obi Toppin, if you remember that game, Toronto in the first quarter was drilling threes. They hit 7 in the three. They hit, I think, their first 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. They were just could not miss from outside. Knicks were in trouble. Obi Toppin comes in the game. Obi Toppin hits four three-pointers. In the boom, 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 boom. He's hustling on defense. He created off the dribble for Sims. Like, it was one of those, Obi's played 5 minutes and he's done like 12 minutes worth of, you know, work. And he sat. And the rest of the game, in a game where there was no Mitchell Robinson, in a game where Hartenstein had major struggles, against an opponent where nobody's taller than like 6'8".
Right.
Obi played 3 minutes the rest of the game. Huh. Now, you see that and you say, okay, I don't, that doesn't seem to me like you want to win. Like, maybe you have something else in mind, but this is what I'm getting to. This is the madness of this coach. You see that and you think, like, I guess you don't want to win. Like, maybe you want to teach the young kid a lesson. Maybe there's something to you bigger than wins and losses, but like, that's not the action of someone who just wants to win. Then the last minute of the game, the Raptors are up 10 points. The game is over. There's 40 seconds left. The Raptors are just passing the ball up the court. Thibodeau is, and you can hear him because the building has cleared out because it's obviously over. Mm-hmm. Thibodeau is screaming at Randall and Quentin Grimes to double whoever on the Raptors like has the ball. Now, from the outside, that looks like the Thibodeau we were talking about, the one who's just maniacal about winning. He's gotta, like, you can't let it go. But what you see there is, like, it doesn't matter how much, you know, relationships are the same way. It doesn't matter how hard you want something to work. Mm-hmm. If what you're doing is flawed, all you can get is something flawed. Something is flawed in a person who plays Obi Toppin 11 minutes in a game where he is the best thing you have going. And also, it's his best game since he came back from his injury. Like, he's confident, he's feeling good, like, you want to ride that. The man who plays him 11 minutes and sits him, and that's the same man screaming at his starters who have played 40 minutes to double team down 10 with 30 seconds left, something there doesn't add up.
No, it doesn't add up.
So you see it in the rotations. You see it in the approaches that they take. You see it in the Cam Reddish situation. You see the other night, the other game, Evan Fournier, that same game, Evan Fournier played 21 minutes. He wasn't making baskets. Mm-hmm. And you know, if Fournier is not an insult, this is the truth of a well-paid man. If he's not making baskets, he has no business out there.
Right.
He's playing 21 minutes. Obi gets 11. Cam Reddish gets 0. So there's something there, but we were talking about this before the air. Like, Tom Thibodeau didn't win a contest. Like, he got hired by Leon Rose. Leon Rose knows this man. Leon Rose has a prior agent-coach relationship. Like, he knows Tom Thibodeau. He knows what he's about. Mm-hmm. So is Tom Thibodeau – if Thibodeau's doing things the organization doesn't want, you would assume Thibodeau would be in trouble, mm-hmm. and the organization would make that clear. So does this mean, and the Knicks, you know, famously, they won't hold no press conferences. They won't talk to anybody during the year. So we have to guess. Mm-hmm. Am I supposed to guess then that, no, Tom Thibodeau must be doing what you want? Because right. otherwise he couldn't get away with it. So that doesn't answer your question. But to me, that just summarizes, like, looking at Tom Thibodeau, why I think he was the right man to bring in 2 years ago. I mm-hmm. think when you had a team with no organization, no culture, no identity, no success of any kind. And by the standard of Knick coaches, he's been very successful. This mm-hmm. is two out of 3 years, he's been mostly a winning team. Mm-hmm. Good. He got him to this point. I'm very happy with that. I'm starting to think it's not just a matter of the players, that if you want to get to the next level, this may not be the man who's going to get you there. And if you look over his career, other than when he had Derrick Rose fall in his lap mm-hmm. as a 20-year-old MVP, you know, player like we had not seen in I don't know how long, Derrick Rose. Mm-hmm. Other than that, his other teams in Chicago, they didn't go anywhere. Minnesota, I'm not saying this is all Thibodeau's fault.
Right.
But there's a lot of evidence that this is who he is. And just mm-hmm. like we wouldn't, you wouldn't look at Julius Randle and be pissed off because he's not Giannis. Mm-hmm. Like, he's very good. He's very good. He can do mm-hmm. a lot of good for you, but he's not someone that you say you're the best player on a title contender. Tom right. Thibodeau is not that guy. Tom Thibodeau has gotten you where he could get you. Thank you. Right. Thank you. Retire with honor.
Mm-hmm.
But now you need to bring someone in who we're not fundamentally confused by.
Right. Let me ask you, I'm going to ask you the first question. I got two questions in regards to that before we get to the lineups that he's been using and things like that. How would you think Jeff Van Gundy would have coached this group of talent? And would this group of talent win more games under Jeff Van Gundy?
I can't say that it would, because to be fair to Tom Thibodeau and to mm-hmm. be honest about Jeff Van Gundy, like... Jeff Van Gundy had, you know, two 50-win teams with the Knicks when Patrick Ewing was still there. Allen Houston was there. Latrell Sprewell. Like, the talent combination of that team versus this team, like, not close. And then when Van Gundy was in Houston, when he had Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady, he was great.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people would do well with Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady. And we didn't have them both, not so much. So I can't say, I know, like, we look back and Van Gundy's like the last, like, happy memory we have of a coach. I can't say that he would do better than Thibodeau with the team.
Mm-hmm.
Because Van Gundy coached, they come from the same school. Van Gundy would have been defense first. Van Gundy would have had wars with RJ Barrett. Van Gundy would have given RJ Barrett hell. He would have made his life very difficult. What was your other question? Was Van Gundy, would he win more?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other one?
The next question is, if you were to replace, I mean, as we've got Joey G, he's joining us in about a second. Now, if you were to replace Tom Thibodeau, for me, as a Knicks fan, as just a basketball fan, Leon Rose has no choice but to hire Mark Jackson as the head coach. That's the only way this fan base would be satisfied with the coaching change as we speak. There's no way around it.
I would say that you would satisfy definitely one portion of the fan base, and you would infuriate another portion of the fan base. Mark Jackson is very, that man is very 50-50 with this fan base. Like, and every time, like you're saying, every time there's an opening, bring him home. Mark Jackson. And like you're saying, there's stuff you can look at. Mark Jackson had Golden State, you know, further along before Steve Kerr took over than Tom Thibodeau has taken the Knicks so far. I would play devil's advocate and say, like, Mark Jackson left under a lot of controversy from his time in Golden State. And that was about 8 years ago. And nobody's hired Mark Jackson since then. Is there a reason for that? Like, I don't know. I would. I think what you raised is a very interesting question. Is like, okay, let's say you get rid of Thibodeau. You have on the bench right now, Johnny Bryant is a highly, highly regarded, one of the most highly regarded assistant coaches that people around the league think he's going to be the next head coach. Like, the Knicks love, everybody loves Johnny Bryant. But if you're firing Tom Thibodeau, presumably it's because you're feeling like, I need some assurance that we're going to level up here. Like, I want to get to the next step. And rookie head coach is not maybe the way you want to go do that. But then the question is, okay, so who was the guy out there that there's your guarantee? Like, that's the guy. Like, when they got Pat Riley years ago, there was no question. Like, that's the guy. That's who you get. Even when they got Mike D'Antoni, like, he was a guy. He wasn't the guy, but he was like a guy who hung around the guy. So you got him. Now, who is it now?
I don't see it.
Is there anybody. Is there a name that comes right to your mind that you're like, that's the guy?
No, I don't see. I don't see nobody. I don't see nobody out there that can take this team.
So here's the thing: we are so used to. You're not the guy. So now we got a guy who's kind of the guy. Well, we all want to be like, get out of here, guy. And we don't even know who the next guy should be. You hear how that sounds?
It doesn't sound good. It sounds messed up. But I think Thibodeau is the guy for the team. But he has to get over his stubbornness, too. You know, sometimes
I don't know if he can. You're right. I don't know if he can.
Because there's lineups that he could have used. Fournier, you got to play devil's advocate here. Leon Rose didn't do a good job putting the right team around Thibodeau in the first place. Two bad free agent signings with Fournier and Kemba Walker. I'm a big fan of Kemba Walker. The same thing that happened with Glenn Rice. The Knicks got him. They got him 2 years too late. You know, Glenn Rice should have been with the Knicks at that last stage of Ewing's good, great run. If they had Glenn Rice on that Knicks team with Allen Houston, I mean, and you could have done a big guard lineup with Latrell Sprewell, Allen Houston, and Glenn Rice and Ewing. That's a championship team.
I would have had the shooting for once.
The shooting that would open up Patrick Ewing to now go back to what he used to do when he was younger, face up in the post. The game that everyone says that Ewing was never a great center, but Shaq will bring it up. Patrick Ewing with the high top and the face up was a bad man. And he stopped doing that. He should be back to the basket and fade away. But when Patrick went face up, he had enough handles to get to the basket and dunk on people.
Crossed over Bill Cartwright.
Badly.
Game 192. Look it up on YouTube.
That's the first they're showing. That's the first move they show on YouTube. And I heard
you were looking like Allen Iverson going baseline on Bill Cartwright.
Just to get off topic before we get back on the topic, I heard Embiid was dissing Hakeem Olajuwon, saying that he don't know nothing. He's an old guy. I'm like, first of all, Hakeem Olajuwon could have played in this era. So can Patrick Ewing.
Today, Hakeem could come walk on the floor today and give Embiid 10 minutes.
Listen, Shaq could have played in this era of basketball. David Robinson could have played in this era. Ewing could have played in this era, and Hakeem could have played in this era. And with the lack of physicality, them four guys, we wouldn't be, we would not even be talking about Joel Embiid or Jokic. We would not be talking about them.
Embiid would have broken apart years ago if those dudes were in the NBA. Done.
But let's get back to the lineups that I'm not.
Embiid was like Lennox. Remember when Lennox Lewis was like heavyweight champ?
Yeah,
but it was like kind of right after all the big heavyweights.
Yeah, right after Holyfield.
That's Embiid. Yep. You don't want George Foreman and Joe Frazier and Ali. You don't want that. Stay in your era. Be happy in your era. Keep your mouth shut.
He don't want prime Mike Tyson.
No. He doesn't want old Mike Tyson. He doesn't like Mike Tyson from the Tyson Mysteries. He doesn't want any Mike Tyson.
and didn't he lose a Holyfield like twice?
At least Mike got a part of his ear.
Yeah.
Right.
Riddick Bowe beat Lennox too?
Yeah.
I believe he did. There's no other pod. There's no other stream giving you all these old boxers.
Nah, not at all. Not at all. But yeah, let's get back. Let's get back to the lineup configuration of this team. I love the Jalen Brunson signing. But the pursuit of Donovan Mitchell made no sense because you had them two playing the same position. And it would have made the Knicks smaller. And you have to give up RJ and Quickly. And now, as we're getting closer to the trade deadline right now, we spoke about the Cam Reddish, possibly, you know, the guy they want to get rid of. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now that the teams are calling for IQ, calling for Obi Toppin, because everybody knows in the NBA that those guys are not being used properly. Everybody knows that. They see value in Obi Toppin. They see value in IQ. But the only way I would trade IQ, if we get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. That's the only way I would even do it. Only way I would do it. And that would be the one difference maker the Knicks could make.
The only thing, I hear that a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't see any reason at all why Oklahoma City would want to trade him. Like, I understand wanting him, and I understand we'll give you this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly's not the best player. I love Quickly. He's not the best player on the Knicks.
No.
The best player on the Knicks is not getting you Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The best two players on the Knicks are not getting you Shai Gilgeous. Like, all the Knicks are not getting you Shai Gilgeous. Like, there's no one on the Knicks that the Thunder are going to say, that's better for our future than the guy who's scoring 30 a game now. And, like, I hope you're right. Like, Dom, I will build you a cult if you can spin Quickly into Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, I will be the founding member. But unfortunately, like, I don't think the Thunder thought he was the guy that they were, with all those draft picks, that they were waiting to find that guy. I don't think they thought it would be him, but I think it is him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone this year is seeing, like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's that guy. Now, there's other players out there. There's a lot, like, there's really no stars coming out in this summer. But there's a couple players that are possible lesser level that I'm curious what you would think. Because I think one thing we know the Knicks need always is shooting. They don't have a lot of shooting.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Knicks could also use a little bit of size and toughness on the bench.
Oh, yeah.
And some scoring. So a guy who I think would be a great fit. I'm curious what you think about his game. Dylan Brooks from Memphis. He's going to be available. He's an unrestricted free agent. What do you think of Dylan Brooks?
I like it. We need some ruggedness to protect us from the yearly injury bug of Mitchell Robinson. It's becoming pretty evident that he's going to get injured every year. Another guy they could get in the short term for this year is Andre Drummond from the Pistons for the short run. Because I'm not a fan of Hardenstein. We talked about it on Facebook and Messenger. I'm not a fan of that guy. He does not fit this team. Every time I see too many players, even the last game against the Cavs, I've seen too many bigs beating him to the too many bigs and too many smalls beating him to the rebound. Your job as a 6'11" guy, no matter if you space the floor or not, is to get the rebound. Get the big rebound. He does not do that. He made a big play last game. But that's one in how many games?
He has struggled massively. Like massively.
You know what I'm saying? And Sims could be good, but he needs more seasoning. So,
which he's only going to get if you move Hartenstein. That's the only way Sims is going to get the minutes.
He has to get the minutes.
Get that experience.
And you got to flirt. You got to, as I don't care what anybody tells me, you got to now flirt. We're putting Randle at the five and Obi Toppin at the four. And I believe if Toppin works on his game in the summertime with the jump shot, get that more consistently, not just for the three-point shot, but the 18-footer, the in-between game, the mid-range game that made Michael Jordan the greatest player in history in the NBA, the mid-range game. You get that. Now, you could put Obi Toppin could play three positions. He could play the five, the four, and the three. He's 6'9". He could play three of those positions. You see that versatility that you could possess?
Mm-hmm.
Knicks go big and put Barrett back at the two. We talked about this last time you were on the podcast, Matt. We felt that RJ, I said, mention RJ could play the three, but I see this season why he should not be the three.
Mm.
He's not strong enough to be the three.
Physically. He's strong for a two. He's not strong for a three. Yeah.
But the reason why they're doing it is for Quentin Grimes. They want him in the starting lineup. Quentin Grimes, I'm not saying I'm lukewarm. I like Quentin Grimes as a player. I do like him. The defensive intensity he brings to the game. Sometimes he makes the big 3-point shots, but it's not consistent. I see they give Deuce McBride some run, but I think his time is up as far as getting that burn, being the eighth guy off the bench. They need to reconsider. If you're not gonna trade Rose, you gotta reconsider him to play those minutes.
I'm surprised at how long McBride has stayed as like that last guard, mm-hmm. like ahead of Rose, ahead of Fournier. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because when Thibodeau first went to the 9-man rotation, mm-hmm. like I wonder if the front office like kind of gave him an ultimatum, because he went with like the Tibbs 9, like defense and his top guys, and it had McBride and it had Quickly. And it had Grimes. And I think Grimes starting, Grimes gets a lot of minutes with Quickly, with Mitch. Like, defensive players, when you put them together out there, like offense, they can multiply each other's strength. Like, three great defensive players out there look like five great defensive players out there because of all the extra work that they can do. McBride is often now, I'm finding... I think his defense has regressed a little bit. I think he's still good, but like he's not quite, and this could be minutes. He's getting more playing time than ever. He might. Grimes, the same thing. Grimes has still not actually played like a full season total. So these guys might be hitting walls that they haven't hit before, but McBride has been just a little bit of a slip defensively. It's his offense where I've been encouraged the last couple of games. He has shown more of a willingness to drive to the basket and to look for passes when he gets there, where up to most of this season he's just been like a catch and shoot guy or a guy when the shot clock's running down, like he'll take it. But like if you remember last season, Quentin Grimes was like that. Quentin Grimes would only take like certain shots in certain situations. We talked about Thibodeau before being very controlling. Grimes could only do certain things. This year you've seen, as he has more trust and more experience, Grimes is doing a lot of attacking closeouts, driving to the basket, showing you things off the dribble, things that last year he would have been yanked if he had even tried to do. I actually think that McBride is growing. I know Thibodeau loves him. If Thibodeau is here next season, I think McBride is going to be the next guy that you see getting more and more minutes and showing more and more, trying to do more and more things. I think Thibodeau likes him a lot. That may not fit the timeline. You know, if the front office decides Tibbs, you're out, and we're trading Quickly for, okay, now maybe things are different. But they still are missing, you know, by moving Grimes to the, I mean,
Barrett.
They had good balance. Yeah, when RJ came back, even knocking Quickly down back to the bench, their bench doesn't score like it used to when Grimes was on the bench. Like, that's one thing that's hurting them now. Every game, it was different last game. The Cleveland game was actually the first one in a while where the Knicks bench like outscored the opponent. But for a while, their bench has been getting just killed by people in terms of scoring. And that's why I think a guy like Dylan Brooks, if there's one thing that he can do, he's not like the best shooter, but he's good enough and he's willing to put up enough shots that he'll get you 16, 21, you know, more often than not.
Got you. Let me pose this, because we told my trades. The team needs to avoid the seventh seed at all costs, because I don't think if he gets down to a play-in game, one game against the Raptors, they're going to lose. They're going to lose. There's a few trades they could make. Another trade they could make is Serge Ibaka. He's a free agent this season. You could dump, you give Milwaukee Hardenstein. If you could get them to take Fournier too, wonderful. But you may have to
throw in that. There was rumors about a deal where the Knicks would get Grayson Allen and Ibaka and give the Bucks Reddish and, I don't know, something else insignificant. Would you do that deal? Grayson Allen, Serge Ibaka, Cam Reddish goes the other way.
The coach has no use for Reddish, so you have to do it. Me personally, I wouldn't trade Reddish at all, despite his contract situation, because he brings a dynamic to the bat, to the floor. If you open the floor, if you do open floor basketball, he's a decent enough defender to be on the floor. And his defense turns to instant offense, because he's going to take that ball and shoot up the court. But the problem with the Knicks, Matt, that I see, is with Reddish. He, for some reason, him and Randle don't mesh on the floor. I think that's why he's on the bench as well.
Yeah,
Randle clogs up a lot of stuff. I'm not taking away of Randle's season. Do I have a dislike for Randle? Yes, I do, because of his emotional and his mental state on the floor when things don't go his way. That hurts the team completely. But he's a roadblock for Obi Toppin. He's a roadblock for Cam Reddish. He's a roadblock for RJ Barrett.
Let me ask you a question. From what you've seen so far of RJ Barrett, if I gave you the number 1.5 over under RJ Barrett career All-Star game appearances, what are you picking?
What I'm seeing right now?
Yeah.
Under one.
Okay.
Under
Obi Toppin. 1.5 career All-Star game appearances over under.
As a team, the way the team's constituted now? Or if they were to trade Randle?
I'm not saying trading Randle. I'm saying just guessing Obi's future, whether it is with the Knicks or he gets traded somewhere else. 1.5 All-Star over under. If you have to guess, what would you guess?
Over 1.5.
Okay. You are very high on Obi. I think more than the Knicks are. I asked you about RJ because I guess in part my question would be, Randle's going to make his second All-Star game this year. Mm-hmm. He could make All-NBA again this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Randle's best is a level that RJ has never – RJ's young, not his fault, but RJ's never shown he can get to All-NBA second level. Right. He can be a two-time All-Star. So, to some extent, what do I care if Randle – like, you could say Randle is blocking RJ. Mm-hmm. I could say RJ hasn't taken it. And is Randle supposed to get out of the way for him? Is Randle supposed to stop? Since Randle and RJ got to the Knicks the same year, Randle has been better. I'm a Randle fan going back to when he was in high school. Randle's been better than anyone thought he would be. And if you look at the history of Knicks free agency, Randle is arguably the greatest free agent the Knicks have ever signed. So that's the level we're starting at there, okay? RJ Barrett, and I like RJ. RJ was the third pick in the draft. Do you feel in year, whatever it is, year three, year four, whatever, like, are you seeing from RJ, that looks like my number three pick in the draft guy? That looks like my top three guy.
You want to know something? We spoke last year. I felt that when we spoke last year, I told you, that I felt he should be the guy with the ball in his hands in the fourth quarter.
You still feel that way?
I still believe he should be the guy with the hands in the fourth quarter. But this is the scenario with Barrett. Barrett did not play with a point guard like Jalen Brunson his first 2 years.
True.
So the ball's not going to be in his hands as much as it was the past 2 years. And that's the reason. That's one reason why he's going to make, he's going to win less All-Star. You know, he's the under for one All-Star game. Does he have the potential to be one more, one and a half All-Star team? Yes, I do believe he has the talent for that. However, one, there's two things. One is mindset. He has to be the one to take the reins. He got to take that, take those reins. No matter who's in the way, who was in his way, he got to take the reins the way he took the reins the first 2 years. Now he's taking a step back from Brunson. You don't do that. If you believe you're the alpha dog, you don't take a step back from anybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's the one thing about Julius Randle that, you know, as much as I dislike him for his antics, he's an alpha dog, but he's not a championship dog.
Yeah, I do. But I think he cannot do any more than he's done. Like, since he got there, you know, the 2 years in a row, he led the team in points, rebounds, and assists. No Nick has ever done that, ever. He did it 2 years in a row. And then this season, wow, you give him a point guard to play with, and suddenly he looks a lot better also. Like, I think... I'm an admitted big fan of his, but I think that he is underrated by the fans and by the media, and that they're missing out on the fact that, like, if you take a look at, like, what he signed for and what people hoped he would do and what he's actually done, and now he's just starting a deal that, as all the other contracts have gone up, looks like a very team-friendly contract for what he makes, for what he gives you. There's not a lot of guys doing that. Right. And I agree with you. The body language, I mean, you can see his body language from space. When this guy is pissed off, like, it is the worst energy. It is the worst. Like, it's terrible. And, like, literally, I put the game on, right as they put the game on last night, he was pissed that someone missed a rotation, and his hands are up in the air. And I feel like I'm watching my kid, and I'm, like, embarrassed in public. Like, Julius, come on, man. Like, I don't like that. It's hard. It really is a bad energy because he's the best player. He's the team's best player. Like, he's the oldest one. Like, they're going to look to you. And thankfully, they don't all do that also. But I think this is hard for a New York City athlete, especially, to get away with. Randle does not hide his emotions. Like, if Randle is feeling good, you know Randle's feeling good. He's bouncing. He is smiling. Like, he has his kids with him every other second. Like, he's so radiant when he's happy. And the moment something goes wrong, and, like, we don't like to maybe see that reflected on our TV screens because that's how too many of us are. But, like, the second anything goes wrong, he looks like he wants to kill everybody. And we don't like that look. When you think of the great Knicks ever, you think of Walt Frazier. Walt Frazier is cool as it gets. You think of Patrick Ewing. Patrick Ewing had ferocity. But Patrick Ewing, like, was also very, like, put together. You know, he was very in command. Carmelo, very, like, very dapper. Very, like, whatever you think of him, he feels good about himself. Julius Randle does not look or act like any. It's hard. So it's weird to see. It's weird to see, but I love it, you know.
Is he a modern day Charles Oakley?
He kind of is. Like, if you had to pick a Nick from this team that MSG security is gonna try to throw out of the arena a couple years from now, it will be Julius Randle.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no question.
But I'm gonna say something. I love, no matter what anybody says, I was critical of Carmelo Anthony's game. He's a ball stopper. I felt his presence in the lineup hurt Stoudemire's career. But I love Melo. I love Melo as a ball player. I love what he brought. He took the responsibility on his shoulders and didn't run from it. Yep. He took it, he ate it, and still dropped 60. He went out there and tried to drop 60 again. You know, he never ran away from the pressure. This is probably the only guy. And that, in that era of the LeBron, Wade, and Chris Paul era, who was begging to come to New York. He was not scared of New York. And I felt, you know, as great as LeBron is, he's probably the second best player behind Jordan of all time. Second best player, in my opinion. You know why he's the second best player, in my opinion, of all time? His mentality didn't match Jordan's. He's much more physically talented than Jordan. He does a whole lot more things all around better than Jordan. It's the mental that sets Jordan apart. Jordan was the type of dude that, you know, when LeBron checked out, when he found out Delonte West was banging his moms, if that was Jordan, Jordan would drop 55 and beat up Delonte West after the game.
Okay, I can see that.
That's not wrong.
Because Jordan's about, he got to win. He got to win that. He going to do whatever it takes to win. If his teammates ain't up to par, he going to get that ass. There's no reason. As much as I love the fact that Jason Kidd finally got his championship ring, the fact that Dirk Nowitzki got his championship ring, there was no way in hell that Miami should have lost to the Mavericks that year. No way in hell. I blame LeBron. I blame Wade because Wade been there before. He should have taken over that series and closed out the Mavericks. You know what I'm saying?
Dirk was pretty nasty.
Dirk is legend, man. You know that was Larry Bird of that era.
Tall, I was saying tall ass Larry Bird. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Come on, that's a beast.
You know what I'm saying?
We're just gonna call him Big Bird.
But. The long, make a long story short, with the Knicks, though, what I'm seeing with the Knicks team, something is just missing. Whereas the Knicks 90s team, they just missed that one shooter, that second star for Ewing. That's all they missed. And I felt they had it with Allen Houston, but it was, like I said, different. You caught Ewing in the late last.
It was a little too late.
Right. And Allen Houston was just coming into his own. Mm-hmm. And I told people every day, and people argue with me, the Knicks team, when Chris Childs and Allen Houston came to that team, that was Ewing's best, most talented Ewing team that got jilted because of P.J. Brown flipped Charlie Ward.
Yep.
And I don't care what anybody says. Jordan and Pippen did not want to see that Knicks team in the playoffs.
Not that year.
especially when they beat them in United Center with the full squad playing. Mm-hmm. Full Bulls squad was playing. They beat them in the United Center that last game of the season. Mm-hmm. So there's some element of fear there. Because you got LJ. LJ wasn't grandmama, but LJ was still despite his bad back, was a player that could potentially drop 25 a game on you.
And he kept Pippen occupied in the post.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. Way more than Mason ever did, because Larry
LJ wasn't quite at this level. But if you remember the trouble that Xavier McDaniel gave Scottie Pippen,
mm-hmm.
the X-Man just made it his point to beat on him legally and otherwise for 7 games. Larry Johnson mm-hmm. was like a little bit in that direction, not quite,
mm-hmm.
but Scottie Pippen and you mentioned Mason. Larry Johnson could shoot. Like,
yeah,
Scottie Pippen had to, he couldn't roam off of LJ to help on Ewing. Like, he had to stay on him. Mm-hmm. That team would have been, I still say, if I saw PJ Brown, I would kick him right in the knee to this day.
I fight David Stern too, because that was disgusting.
I thought that when the Charles Smith game happened, I always thought, like, this is the worst. Like, this is the worst that it could possibly get.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell if the suspensions are worse. Because it was so obviously the wrong application of the decision. And like the whole, every time people talk about the Knicks and the Heat, they had this great rivalry with it's great. It pisses me off so much because there's only a rivalry because one year, a 7-foot tall man picked up a 6-foot tall man and threw him into the cameras mm-hmm. and half the team got suspended mm-hmm. for doing what anybody on the street would do.
Exactly.
Right.
Miami never beat the Knicks again. That's not a rivalry. You literally assaulted the point guard.
You assaulted a point guard, and you had one Tim. You had one Tim Hardaway breakout game in Game Seven.
And the only reason that the bench thing happened the way it did is because it happened to take place in front of the Knick bench. Yeah. If it had been the other end of the floor, it would have been the Heat.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get all these documentaries and talk about this great rivalry. The Heat couldn't touch those Knicks.
No,
the Knicks were killing them in that series. Yeah. It was the first year that I remember like wanting Chicago. Like in the mm-hmm. past, you'd be like, all right, I think we could maybe take them. But that was a year of like, you know what? We're so good. This mm-hmm. is how you could always tell the best Knicks teams of the 90s. When John Starks was coming off the bench,
mm-hmm.
that was a legit team.
Yeah.
And 97, it was Allen Houston backed up by John Starks.
Mm-hmm.
That's a far cry from, you know, Gerald Wilkins and fucking Kiki Vandeweghe. Like,
yeah,
that's a different reality.
And then don't forget too, I mean, as much we love Mace, Buck Williams was a key cog in that rotation, the former Blazer.
Buck Williams is very good with the Knicks.
Mm-hmm. You know, key contributor. And Chris Childs, that first year was magnificent as a point guard. And, you know, we lamenting on old Knicks. And it's sad because we still don't have that Knicks team that we did, because put those Knicks teams in the rear view. We still don't have that team yet.
Mm-hmm.
We still don't have that team yet. And everybody, and Knicks fans rue the day where they cursed out Ewing, they booed Ewing, they hated Ewing. Ewing, for 15 years with the Knicks, was guaranteed mm-hmm. second round playoffs. Guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. With nothing around him.
Nothing around him.
I don't think it came from any one of us, because mm-hmm. I never viewed Ewing in that way. I felt like he was that dude. Like you said earlier, he was that dude when mm-hmm. it came to the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we relied on him heavily to do his job, and he did his job well.
Mm-hmm. And it just hurts me to see him and Oakley going back. I mean, Oakley's attacking him now, so he didn't have the mental strength to beat Jordan. Oakley was just mad that Ewing didn't step up for him in that MSG incident.
Yep. Yeah.
Yes. That we can say that, because when Oakley was a part of that Knick team with Ewing, there was no animosity there. And it seemed like Oakley was that the force that you were talking about. We need a force like Oakley now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey, we need Oakley. We need Oakley on the coaching staff.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
That because maybe, he would probably bring that to the team. They need a little bit more. Yeah, I do agree with you guys as far as that. They need a little bit more oomph.
Mm-hmm.
need that.
And Oakley would have got Julius Randle's focus.
How do you think the Lakers got as far as they did when they had Shaq? Because Shaq used his weight.
Mm-hmm. Shaq
used Lakers, his weight.
The Lakers was a legendary team. They got Mr. 24 or 6 or 8, whatever you wanted, to wear. Mr. Kobe. God rest his soul. You know what I'm saying? The guy who's
Kobe
been over.
Was a worker.
Kobe
was a worker bee.
Kobe was a talent that's been overlooked as one of the greatest players in the game. And Kobe
on the
Kobe
court
Bryant,
and off the court.
Kobe Bryant was on Jordan and LeBron's is on LeBron and Jordan's level.
Let me ask you something. I gotta cut now, but I just thought of this. Mm-hmm. I want both of you to answer the question. Mm. Immediate first thought. Don't take a long time to analyze it. Just first thought that comes in your brain. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If Kobe Bryant had LeBron James's body, would he have been better than Michael Jordan?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
I never thought of that question until right now, but I was like, that's interesting.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Kobe.
That's interesting.
Kobe had he learned from Jordan how to be a killer.
Yes. Right, right, right.
Be an assassin.
Right.
That's case closed.
There was a rivalry there too.
Mm-hmm. There was a rivalry there.
When they first came on, Kobe dunked on Jordan. There was a rivalry there. Jordan was like, the next time I see this dude,
you paid attention,
I'm gonna show him the business.
Uh-huh.
He paid him a lot of attention.
You know what I'm saying? He was closer to the Jordan stopper than anybody else ever. Right. I already mentioned Gerald Wilkins and Bobby Phils.
He came for that purpose. Like Kobe had that in his mind. Like, no, that's the dude. I want to beat him. Him. I'm coming for him. Nobody's dunked on him. I'm going to be the first. And he did.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask Matthew and you got Joe this question, because we're going to talk about Phil Jackson. Okay. Ooh. It's five years with the Knicks as a general manager. Mm-hmm. You do realize Phil Jackson passed on Donovan Mitchell.
All right, I got to defend Phil Jackson here. A lot of teams passed on Donovan Mitchell. I remember because I covered that draft leading up to it, and I remember writing a scouting report on Donovan Mitchell. Everybody's interest with the Knicks, as far as Donovan Mitchell, was if they traded down, they were picking around eighth. Mm-hmm. And the thinking was if they traded down to around the 12 or 13, maybe they would take it. Nobody had Donovan Mitchell in that draft going top 10. Like, nobody.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't pass on him. And if you want to criticize Phil Jackson, there were a lot of stories about him falling asleep, literally, while, like, scouting players. Like, they would see him out in the bleachers and his ass would be snoring. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's a legit point of criticism. I'll get on Phil Jackson for that. I'll get on Phil Jackson for a lot of things, mm-hmm. but nobody had Donovan Mitchell being this guy. Like, nobody.
They had Ntilikina rated higher than him.
They did. You know what? Dallas wanted Ntilikina before the Knicks took him. And then, because if you remember, Dallas is always full of shit. Dallas got Dennis Smith Jr. because the Knicks took Ntilikina. And Carlisle and Mark Cuban told everybody how thrilled they were because the guy they wanted was Dennis Smith Jr. A couple of years later, the Knicks trade Kristaps Porzingis. They get back Dennis Smith Jr. in the deal. About a year later, Ntilikina signs with Dallas, and Dallas starts talking shit about how Ntilikina was actually the guy they wanted. So I don't want to hear. I can't hear anything from those. I can't hear those people.
I got you. You know what, Matt? We gotta do this next week, man. We gotta do this next week. Hopefully, we better do it live next week. There's a lot of things I want to talk more about the Knicks, this current roster. Let's give this a week with the future games. What we're seeing here, we jump back next week. I also want to talk to you about the New York Mets and the college career mm-hmm. fiasco. We're both big Mets fans. We got Joey G there with the Yankees. You know.
I'm holding the Mets down right now.
But just to give you a little prelude to everyone about what we're going to talk about next week is Steve Cohen has to mature as a baseball owner. He has to mature as a baseball owner. I mean, you got to understand, I understand he's a fan of the Mets first and then he's an owner. But when you take that seat as owner, you can't be the fan first. You got to be the owner first. And there's certain decorum that you have to have when you're dealing with agents. If an agent doesn't bring his player to your team, he can't go out in the newspaper and criticize the agent in the newspaper. That's how you don't get the big players. You want to know what? I'm going to tell everybody straight up. You know the reason why we lost Jacob DeGrom? Because you went out and bought a 40-year-old pitcher for $45 million. While Jacob DeGrom, who was your homegrown player, took a discount because his agent was the general manager of the Mets. You fired his agent, who was the general manager of the Mets. You think he was going to stay? That's how you lost Syndergaard, who that general manager was his agent as well before he took the GM seat. You know what I'm saying? And I ate crow. I'm going to tell Matt before Matt goes. I'm eating crow on Zach Wheeler. I'm eating a whole lot of crow because I thought he wasn't worth that money. I mean, a whole lot of crow.
I like Wheeler. He's turned out well.
He turned out very well. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud. I'm proud of him. I'm really proud of him. He took care of his walks, and now he's an ace. But that's going to be for next week's podcast. Hope we can do it again on Wednesday. Hopefully do it live. We get everything, all the
nuances.
The nuances and the technical difficulties taken care of, so we don't talk like kung fu, like talk like we were in a kung fu movie and stuff like that. So I'm gonna let you guys have the final word, and then we're gonna end the podcast here.
I just want to say thank you very much, Sensei, for having me on your show today. And
definitely
a very special bonus to me for getting to see my man Joey G's face again. I have not seen Joey G in a very, very, very long time, and I have an entire section of life that is just enriched with my memories of this kid. And
we have a whole series that should have been on Nickelodeon.
There's B-sides, there's like bonus up. There's so much. I mean, every time I think of one thing and then I remember another, Mm-hmm. So it was very good to get to see and hear you, Joey.
Listen, do the right thing. Hey, it's always fun catching up with you guys. It brings back a lot of memories, especially coming to Uniondale, meeting you guys for the first time on a little league field. So regardless if I'm involved in the conversation of baseball or any sports, that's where we started. So in the background, I don't mind being in the background, not saying too much, because that's where we started. And to this day, I don't care if I'm in the back of the room, I'm still going to be listening to the situation that's going on, because the voices that I hear, both intelligent, very well-read, both know their stuff. And I've known this for years. I've never been the one to sit there with the analytics of the situation as far as when it came to any sports team, but I love listening to it. And these were the people that got it from when we were growing up. So to be a part of this now, as far as when we're older, is great. I look forward to doing it again. And yes, it's always excellent to see my brothers on the screen. I wish we could do this in person, because this would be so much better. But just to get this interaction, it is what it is. I look forward to doing it next week. And same bat time, same bat channel.
And it's a beautiful thing. Of course, Matt, I appreciate you joining the show. Of course, hopefully I could be on the Believe podcast as well whenever you guys.
Absolutely.
My hope and dream is that we have all of us together. Matt, we go back since kindergarten, man. You the guy I sat next to in kindergarten in Miss Caroline's class and stuff like that. Your father was my coach, my first coach in low minors. I didn't play T-ball. I went straight to low minors, and I was hitting the ball when a pitcher throwing the ball at me. And shout out to Coach Miranda, definitely my first favorite coach in the league, Little League baseball. Behind, he was the first, and I got my man Dave Ryan, and Raymond Lindsay was also my Little League coach. Those are my top three coaches of all time. I wasn't a fan of other coaches between those guys and stuff like that.
Junior high school.
Well, in junior high school, my baseball coaches, my favorite baseball coaches were Pete Gumas, Mr. Gumas in Turtle Hook. Yes. And my man Big Al Gunther in Uniondale High School. Okay, I felt that Mr. Gunther, you know, that was my guy, baseball coach. As far as the other guy, that idiot that did varsity.
We don't remember.
I don't care about him, because he was promoting the wrong guys. So, he promoted one of them right, my guy Sean Tolliver, but he promoted some other guys that wasn't even on Sean Tolliver's level. And that's my opinion about the situation. You're in that Little League, during my era.
It has been said by many sports scholars that the 1986 Blue Team was the greatest Uniondale Little League baseball team ever assembled.
And me and Matthew were part of that team.
There was legendary players, Jeff Triola.
Yes.
There was Robbie, the lefty, I can't remember his last name now, but
Eric James.
He was like Darryl Strawberry, yeah. And if you're out there, and I know he's another Uniondale alum, mm-hmm. there is a man that you probably both graduated high school from who mm-hmm. 1 year I was pitching and he was at the plate and the bases were loaded mm-hmm. and my team was up by one run. Mm-hmm. This man had not struck out all season. Mm-hmm. I got him 3-2. Mm-hmm. I struck him out. Mm-hmm. If you're listening, Reggie George, I remember you. I remember you. And I never had to pitch to you again, so you never got back to me.
Definitely. As far as yeah. high school baseball, I mean, one of my pitcher, I was his catcher, Sean Tolliver. Shout out to him. You know, I felt he had the time to be in the major leagues. You know what I'm saying? Who else? I was part in the Uniondale Little League where we had the four greatest catching talent of all times. Myself, Shigantha LeGrand, Jules Alexander, and Jeff Beltran. Four greatest catches in Uniondale history, all in one era. You know what I'm saying? One era. All of us play at the same time. And that idiot varsity coach for Uniondale High School didn't know how to use me and Shigantha LeGrand. Did not know how to use us. I could have played third fucking base and Shigantha could have been the catcher. He didn't know how to use us. You know what I'm saying? That's a problem. You know, I wish, you know, Coach Miranda was able to coach our team because I felt we'd have been much better than what we were in my varsity year. Much better. You know what I'm saying? That idiot had to share the same last name as the greatest football coach in Green Bay. You know, but you know, you already know how I feel about that guy. You know, he had no business being a baseball coach. He didn't know how to utilize the talent that he had. And a lot of talent in Uniondale Little League baseball didn't want to play baseball because of him. Mm. You know what I'm saying? We had some talent. Uniondale had talented from minority town. We had a hell of a talent of baseball players.
Not just baseball. We had like every sport.
Yeah.
Talent in every sport.
You know what it is too? We know that. Mm-hmm. Because they showed the football, showing the basketball
cross
court.
Country,
all that
track field.
But baseball was left back.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it was.
It was left back because of poor coaching.
That was in the backfield, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Both because of bad coach, he thought he knew more than me. And other coaches, but you know, let me tell you something, Matt. You know, I know you left Uniondale before the high school and junior high school era, mm-hmm. but I'm gonna tell you something. What I've heard from scouts in 1996, 95, 96, from scouts that I spoke to, they have told me face to face, Dom, we wanted to scout you, we wanted to scout other players on Uniondale High School, but we did not like the coach. That's what didn't come to the games.
Mm.
And that was co-signed by Dr. Lloyd. Co-signed. Wow. Co-signed. So this coach as a president of Uniondale High School cost a lot of us an opportunity to play in the pros.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And that's not just incompetence.
No. It wasn't about incompetence. It's the attitude. He thought he knew more about baseball than anyone else, which was sadly mistaken. Like I said,
even a sensei wouldn't say that, though.
Like I said, if we had Coach Miranda coaching that talented group that we had, who underachieved, even Big Al Gunther coaching that team in varsity, my favorite gym teacher coaching in the Vaji, coached that team.
Yeah, Vaji.
Let me tell you something, bro. It'd be night and day. This guy and this same coach, sorry to keep you mad. I know you have to go. This coach had to come to me. We saw me a few years later. Now you see, Dom, you know, now the team is winning. Now with the team, the Uniondale baseball team is on the right path and winning all those games. Yeah, you could win those games when you constantly play Hempstead and Westbury every three games. You could win all those games. Mm-hmm. But when I was playing an all-star team in Little League, we were crushing Farmingdale and Massapequa. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you that because I've been on all-star team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you
I remember being in Farmingdale's ass. I remember that to this day.
We beat Farmingdale's ass, Massapequa's ass, and Oceanside's ass, and East Meadow's ass.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't beat them in varsity baseball all of a sudden. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
Save me with that. That got me in a bad state ending this podcast, man, talking about that idiot.
No. You're like Michael Corleone right now. You're settling all the family business. You're getting everything out now. Get it out.
Mm. I still want to fight his ass, too. Me and him almost came to blows, too. I wanted to fight him, too. I really did. I did not like him. The disrespect that he gave me during a baseball game, I was the starting catcher. He DH'd me.
He what?
He DH'd me.
Oh, okay. Did he tell you in advance he was going to do that, or he just did it?
He just did it to rub it in my face.
Wow.
I wanted to fight that motherfucker at East Meadow. To the point, it was so bad that he did that to me. The coach of the East Meadow coaches, who know me from Little League, and the head coach from East Meadow varsity team was a gym teacher at Turtle Hook. Coach Navaji, yo, Don, why are you not hitting and swinging the bat? After the game, I said, talk to this fucking coach right here.
Mm.
Let me tell you something. Tell everybody this. I've had bad seasons in baseball. I struck out a lot. All right? I admit that. But I had some great seasons, too. And when I had those great seasons, I actually liked the coach.
Mm.
The coach respected my skill. He wasn't trying to kick me down or keep me down or whatever he was trying to do to me. He respected my skill. He always gave me that encouragement. That's the game of life. You got to encourage people, even when they're down. You got to encourage people. When your coach want to kick you while you're down, you ain't gonna get my maximum effort. Hell no. That's what cost me my dream of playing the major leagues, because my attitude stuck too. You know, I should have rose above that, so they say. But if you don't love the man you're playing for, what are we doing?
Also, I want to say this to someone who works with, like, college-age students.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in that kind of a position with a person, your job is more than just, like, delivering your knowledge about baseball or, like, whatever. You're in this very specific, special position where just depending on how you behave with a person, you might have an impact on their future.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone to be in that position, and that's not just like, all right, the coach has a thought and, or, you know, he wants me to call a curveball and I don't, and we have a little argument. Like, this is taking, like, your confidence, your self-image, your... Mm-hmm. You know, it's your memory. You're not going to come back and do it again in 5 years. Like, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And you take it away from someone, and it's not even important enough to you to, like, Dom, let me tell you what I'm thinking. Like, let me, you know, I want to understand, maybe hear something from you that maybe I'll learn something from you. Like, every semester when I grade my kids, mm-hmm. I don't give them any grades all semester, mm-hmm. not a single one. At the very end of the semester, then we talk about, okay, I say, tell me what you think you deserve and tell me why you think you deserve it. Because if they've learned what I taught them all semester, mm-hmm. this is their chance to, like, okay, make an argument. Give me evidence. Like, everything we talked about doing, show me now that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always learn. I always have someone who, like, they walk in and I'm thinking this person's going to get a B. Mm-hmm. And he'll be like, I think I should get an A. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, whatever the fuck. But then he starts talking. And as I listen to him and as I put myself in the position of, like, I'm not above you right now. I'm changing that dynamic just so I can hear you. Every semester, somebody ends up with an A that wasn't going to, because they told me something that I never would have known if I hadn't given them the platform to be like, this is about you.
Mm-hmm.
You got a baseball coach.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding, like, this is not a required class. Everyone who is here mm-hmm. is doing this, is making sacrifice. Like, you are making a sacrifice by being there. You, the player,
mm-hmm.
you're sacrificing your time, your youth, other experiences you could be having, trusting. Okay. you're gonna help at least keep my options open. Even if we don't win the state title, like at the very, very least, this should give me more options in life.
Mm-hmm.
And when you end up looking back being like, I lost out on options because of this person.
Mm-hmm.
That's legit messed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's messed up.
It is. I lived through it. And, you know, despite all that, I was about to be the starting catcher for Nassau Community College, and I had to quit because I had to go to work. I had to put money in my pocket. So that's what, you know, this derailed everything, you know. But you live and you learn, you have an opportunity, and it slipped through your hand. I don't want to say it slipped through my hands. I guess it was God's will, you know, by the end of the day. But it is what it is.
Your life lesson is a testament to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that testament to somebody else may help put their life in a position where that is translated to help them move forward in their life. So don't ever look at it like that, Dom. There's always there's always something. There's always something. Listening to you guys, I understand being that downtrodden person and always being the, you could either be the also ran, you could have the participation award, you could go the distance, but you have to run the marathon regardless.
You have to run it.
You have to run it. In that you gain life experience, you gain intuition as far as what was expected, what should have been done, what could have been done. You get all these different nuances as far as that's concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a perfect mesh. What works for you may not work for the other person.
Mm-hmm.
We all have our different experiences as far as that's concerned. It sounds cool, like, oh, that person, he did this, he did everything right, and he got to where he needs to be, and now he's in the draft, and oh, now he's major league player or NFL player or NBA star.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work like that for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We all have those stages in our lives to get us to different points in our lives, and we all learn differently. We look forward to having those people that can mold us into a position to lift us up to where we need to be. We don't all get it.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody sees the potential in you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will look past you, whether it be because of racial component, whatever the case may be, your dynamic, where you were, living situation, poverty level, whatever the situation, because there's so many things. And we can add more as we get into this generation as well.
Mm-hmm.
But bottom line is life experience is life experience. Don't think that everything is supposed to be perfect, because it's not. Just know that if you're doing something positive, there's guaranteed to be a good result at the end. Guaranteed that. The negative doesn't always last forever.
No, don't. It doesn't last forever. I got you guys.
And just to close it out, missed opportunity may be opportunity for somebody else. And it just be probably your testimony on what happened to you. And it's just that simple. Sometimes it passes you and goes on to the next person, whether it be a student, a relative, son, daughter, whatever the case may be. It happens like that. Y'all have the analytics as far as the sports is concerned, I have a little bit more analytics as far as life experience.
Gotcha.
I want to try to tie these two things together because they're all inclusive. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to my next venture, which is Ego Tripping with Joey G. Bear Combo and Family presents Ego Tripping. And the Ego Tripping is based off something Dom just talked about. We have a coach. His ego is bigger than this player.
Listen, I was an easy player to deal with in high school, man. I had issues from home. I had issues at school. I had issues with, you know, I wasn't an easy person to deal with, man. I mean, as quiet as I was in high school, I wasn't easy to deal with. You know, I was a borderline prima donna and a little bit angry.
People wouldn't understand. Okay, people wouldn't understand your persona. People wouldn't understand that persona that you just described. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't understand that persona unless you described it to them. But they have to see it to recognize it. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of things are. People don't understand it until they actually see physically. They have to physically see it, manifest
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Very true.
I should maybe on Ego Trip, you could do your first interview with me, how I started. I went from a kid that went from home and straight to kindergarten. Didn't have the privilege of going to preschool, you know.
No.
And for
put
that,
him in the class, see what he do.
I was punished and thrown in resource room for the first five years, including kindergarten, because of that. And only to prove that I was supposed to be MAL, only to be told that I couldn't be an MAL because I was once a resource room student.
Huh.
Can I tell you something real quick?
And then not only that, and then not to prove
broke
then
back a memory.
Did I have to prove everybody again when I made the Honor Society in Turtle Hook?
You just brought back a memory. I'm just gonna throw this out real quick.
Go ahead.
I had to do second grade twice. I'm gonna say that.
Okay.
I did second grade twice. I did it in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And then I moved out. I was about to move out to Long Island. Before I did, I had to do second grade again. So I went with my aunt, who was mm-hmm. my mother that raised me, mm-hmm. to her school. And she put me in a bilingual second mm-hmm. grade. Wow. I went from second grade to bilingual second grade. Okay, so we went from ABCs to ABCD. You understand? Okay, the kids in class are speaking Spanish. I'm mm-hmm. looking at them like, yo hablo inglés. So that's where that clash comes in. So if I'm a little bit off at times, it's because of those situations. It's because of those situations. I never seen myself as the par. Mm-hmm. I was always off par, but I understood the course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's me in life, period. Like I'm off par, but I understand the course. Like, if we sit down and we talk, you could tell me your point of view. You have the professional view. I get that. But let me tell you the off-par part that you may have overlooked. And the professional side of me that you may have overlooked, I could put that into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That's why this meshes. That's why when we do True Players Podcast, A Beer Combo and Family, and soon to be Ego Tripping, that's why it meshes. Mm-hmm. This is so the people know. We know this because we grew up together. Mm-hmm. We come from awesome families. Awesome families. All different disciplines, different viewpoints, nationalities, and upbringings. And you get us. You get us in the same room, and we translate that. Mm-hmm. On top of the experiences that we have in life. So that's what we bring forth to the table. So when you're watching us on screen, this is what we're bringing to you. And you want to move final thought? That was it. I got you.
There it is. There it is. There it is. I want to thank Matthew for joining us once again on the podcast. He'll be back with us next week. Next Wednesday, we're going to do it again. This live, we're going to talk about more about Knicks, and hopefully, if anything happens, they're either in the sixth seed, maybe the fifth seed, maybe, or they just may fall into the seventh or eighth seed, and then now we're going to be like, here we go again. We hope not, but you know, that's a scenario. Once again, thanks, Matt, to join the show. He's going to be back next week. Knicks Believe podcast, definitely check that podcast out. Jacobin Sports, definitely check that out. Check out Joey G, Big Convo Family, and Ego Tripping with Joey G. It's your man signing off, True Players Podcast. Subscribe to my YouTube channel. Subscribe to my Patreon channel. Listen to the podcast on Spreaker, Anchor, Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud. It's your man, Big Dom. We're signing off. Till next week. Got you. God bless.